Hello,
Love Talk Radio.
Survivor Tisha, co-host of T and the Big C. I am so happy that everyone is here. Happy, happy new year. We have started a brand new year. We started a brand new decade. Happy 2020 to everyone. I am, again, your host, Tisha, co-host of T and the Big C, and I want to give some well wishes to my co-host, Ty Jones, who is a little under the weather today, so she will not be with us, so it will be just me and you on this show today. So, Ty, if you are listening, we are thinking of you. We hope that you have a speedy recovery and you get well soon. All right. Again, we have started a brand new year, 2020. I know that everyone has some goals, some New Year's resolutions that they always make in the new year. For me, I try not to make a resolution because I know me, and I cannot keep up with my those resolutions. I always don't let them always do not what's the word I'm trying to say I always don't follow through with them. So this year I decided that I'm going to make some goals for myself. So one of my goals that I have decided that I'm going to be doing this year is that I'm going to change up my diet more. I'm going to eat more of a plant-based diet, add more vegetables to my diet. Not eating as much meat as I used to. I know that eating a lot of red meat is certainly not good for your body, so just cutting back on the red meat, cutting back on pork. For those that are listening, I'm from the South, so can't completely cut it out, but
I will cut back on it and add more vegetables to my diet. One thing that another resolution or goal that I'm going to be doing this year is also getting back active. I gotta start back exercising. Getting back walking. One thing that my colleagues at from 9 to 5, I am a teacher. So one thing that my colleagues is doing at my school, we are doing the Biggest Loser. So for those that are listening from my school, much love to you, because that starts actually on tomorrow. So adding more exercise and getting more active in my life. So I need to do that. So I'm going to start back walking. For those that don't know where to start, if you don't want to go to a gym, just walk. Just start walking. 30 minutes a day, or just break it up. If you want to do 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the afternoon, 10 minutes in after you get off of work, get those 30 minutes in. So starting tomorrow, that's what I'm going to be doing. Another goal, that I'm going to be doing this year is I am going to get more financially independent, meaning I'm going to save more, not buy anything that I don't need, and if I have to buy it, it has to be a necessity. Yes. So, and just saving more. That is going to be my 3 goals for the year. So let's keep your fingers crossed, everybody, that I can do this. And we are going to have a wonderful, wonderful 2020. So with that being said, we have some callers on the line. Let's see who we have with us today. All right, let's see. We have caller area code 9110. Last 4 digits are 1591. Hello, and where are you calling from?
Hello, I am calling from Fayetteville, North Carolina, and my name is Nani Keeler Reese.
Hello, Nani. How are you, love?
Hey, I'm doing okay.
I'm so glad you are here. Welcome to the show. Hang tight.
Okay.
All right. Our next caller we have on the line, area code 203. Last 4 digits is 4514. Hello, and where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Deltra, and I'm calling from Connecticut.
Hello, Deltra. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. We got Connecticut in the house. Very good. All right. Well, hang tight, and I will be with you shortly. All right, so we have a couple of callers that are on the line, and we are so happy to have them coming on. And for those that are joining, that will be joining us soon, again, this is Tisha from your host of T in the Big C, hoping that you will join us today because we have a great show in store. So with that being said, today's show, we are talking about living with metastatic breast cancer. We know that cancer in itself can be life-changing, but being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, that's a whole nother beast of another color. So you might be wondering, well, what is metastatic breast cancer? Well, that is for those that do not know, metastatic breast cancer is breast cancer that is stage 4 that has spread to other parts of the body. And those common areas that it spreads to is the liver, the pelvis, bones, the brain, and lungs.
after doing some research on breastcancer.org, nearly 30% of women with early stage breast cancer will be re-diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer months or even years after their original diagnosis. So myself, being an early stage breast cancer survivor, that's something that I keep in the back of my mind. If breast cancer ever comes back, will it come back as metastatic breast cancer? But according to research from known breast cancer organizations such as Susan G. Komen and the Center for Disease Control, women of color die 40% at a rate of 40% higher than white women from breast cancer. Too high of a rate for women of color to be dying with this disease. So we need to do something about it. So, with that being said, metastatic breast cancer doesn't have to be a death sentence. I have met some amazing, amazing women that are living with metastatic breast cancer or MBC, and they are living life to the fullest. They are thriving and surviving. So I want to bring on my first guest, who actually just called in a few minutes ago. Nani, I'm going to bring you back on. Nani, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, all right. Nani, for those that don't know, I met Nani about two months ago in San Antonio. I went to a breast cancer symposium in San Antonio, Texas, and I learned so much about what metastatic breast cancer was, and I met some amazing women that are living with the disease, and Nani was one of the women that I met. So, Nani, I want to thank you once again for coming on the show and just having some tea and chatting with me and everyone else about what is life like for you living with MBC. So, Tell us a little bit about yourself and how, when you were diagnosed with MBC, and what's your life like living with this disease?
Okay. Well, thank you. I really appreciate, you know, you having me on and let me share my story and try to give out some information to women and men about metastatic breast cancer. I was diagnosed originally in 2017. When I was at the age of 36, I felt my first lump, which was on the right side of my breast. But that was in 2015. So, of course, you know, I did pretty much what I was told to do. Once you feel a lump, you go to a doctor, get it checked out, which is what I did. And when I got a mammogram, they told me that it was benign fatty tissue and that my breast was very dense. And I always tell people, looking at my report today, if I knew what I was looking at, if I understood the terminology, I would have, you know, asked for like an ultrasound or a biopsy, because I didn't realize that when your breast is, when the density is so high, you know, I didn't realize that that's pretty much, they can't see anything. So what [S2] Right. [S1] They couldn't see was the cancer growing behind that. So for that whole time, I had no idea, you know, that cancer was growing in me. So once, you know, like I say, they told me everything was benign. If anything changes, come back. Breast cancer didn't run in my family. You kind of went with what, you know, you was told. You know, you only get breast cancer if you older. Usually over the age of like 45, it runs in your family. And so, it ran in my family, and I was fine, and I trusted what, you know, the radiology department said, and I just left. Well, 2 years after that, I started having, like, a lot of issues, a lot of pain, bruises to my skin, and I just wasn't feeling good. So when I went to my doctor to get checked, because I had a thyroid issue, And I'm thinking maybe something's going on with my thyroid. Well, they did some blood work, and it came back that it was positive for lupus. Now, lupus, from my understanding, is very hard to detect. So one of the
right.
tests that actually came back for lupus, they was like, she was kind of surprised because she was saying that, I'm thinking with you having all the, you know, problems that's going on, you should have a flare-up. So that test should have been positive. But we're going to go ahead, we're going to treat you for it, give you the medication, and we'll just, you know, re-examine you within a few weeks, couple months, or whatever. So I was like, okay, fine. Well, when I started this medication, I started having, like, severe back pain. And then I discovered a new lump up under my arm. But at that time, I'm thinking, okay, because I just shaved. You know, sometimes as female, when you shave, you kind of get that little
you can get
up
those,
under your arm.
Yeah.
The little
boar
tissue. So that's
what
I thought it was.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I didn't really think much about it. But then I say, you know, I'm having a lot of pain in my body, and I'm having a lot of sensitivity. I was like, then I got this new lump up under my arm. I was like, let me just go to the doctor and just make sure that, you know, this is have nothing to do with my breast. Well, when I went to the doctor, they, you know, felt like I should get a mammogram, which is what I did. And at that time, before I was getting ready to leave, she said, honey, we're going to do ultrasound. The doctor wants to do ultrasound before you leave. And I said, okay. Well, that was different. And the look that she had on her face was a little different. So after the ultrasound, she was like, you know, we'll give you a call once you get the results. Well, I left there driving to work. Before I even got to work, I got a phone call. And she was like, you know, are you at a place where you can talk? And I said, well, I'm about to be at work. I'll call you back. And she said, well, when you get there, just call us. So I said, okay. Went to work, went to my office. And of course, it was some other little things that took place, but I'm just trying to make it short. Called them back, and indeed, they said that it was positive for it showed that it was breast cancer. So they wanted me to come to the surgeon, go ahead and schedule. You know, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to go ahead and schedule a mastectomy, do chemo, be done
right.
with it. I've seen people.
So you're thinking you get ready to do the same treatment.
Exactly.
You're thinking
we can get ready to do the same treatment and be done with it. Well, when me and my husband went, you know, when you go into the doctor's office, they have little posters and, you know, they have like stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four. And I knew the basics about stage four because my dad passed away from stage four colon cancer in 2016. But, you know, being a man, being a dad, they don't, you know, they try to keep a lot from their kids. So even then, I didn't really see a whole lot. But I just knew stage four, like everybody else, that's the end. That's death. Like, you know, I'm like, well, thank goodness it's not stage four. And the doctor walked in the office, and she was a young doctor, and she had tears in her eyes. And I'm like, okay, what is going on?
Why is she
crying? And
she
said, Ms. Reese, she said, we're not going to be able to schedule surgery because the cancer had already spread. And I'm like,
wow,
what? Here I am, young, you know, 39. I have a young kid, you know, 9 years old. I have a husband. I have two other children. I have a whole lot of life. And I'm like, there's no way possible. Like, I'm a health person. I go to the gym. Anytime something's wrong with me, I go to the doctor. I stay on top of it. So I'm like, how in the world could this have happened? So I'm trying to think of that. You know, I have a lot of anger going on, and I'm just lost because I just had no idea. Like, how did I get here? Like, this wasn't even supposed to happen. So they sent me, you know, to my local doctor office to get start treatment. I started treatment. The first treatment didn't work. Second treatment didn't work. Third treatment. And I'm just like, okay, now it's time to move to somewhere else. So I moved to, which is 2 hours away from me, which is UNC. And I also went and got another, like a third opinion. I went to the Dana-Farber Cancer Center to make sure, since none of the treatments was working, I'm like, okay, well, are we going to run out of options? So I'm still doing research because all this is new, you know, for me. And And when I tell you, you know, it is once we started going through like all the treatments and everything, it was just really tough. It's tough on your body, the side effects that you go through, and people have to remember, you know, life just don't stop when you're diagnosed with cancer. You know, you still have work, you still gotta pay bills, you still have, you know, other issues along the way, and you're trying to adapt to all of this, but you're also trying to be strong for your family, so that way, you know, you can kind of cope with it. And in the midst, you see a lot of people that you meet in this world, and you start seeing people dying, and then, you know, that fear starts to kick in. So I started having like panic attacks because it's like the unknown, like you don't know what's going on.
And so for me,
the cancer has spread pretty much from the top of my head, all the way to my knees, throughout my whole body and my lungs.
Wow.
Well, I just found out about four weeks ago the cancer has spread to my brain. So I started a new treatment to start that process. And when that started, you know, once it spread to the brain, I was kind of like devastated because, you know, I'm like, okay, now what? Like, how am I going to be able to grasp this whole thing? And it's just like, I mean, it's just a scary thing. So, and people don't realize, because I didn't know cancer was like, could be so painful. And for some people, like if you have it in certain parts of your brain, I mean, your body, it may not bother you. But when you have multiple bone mets, that is very, very painful.
Very.
And there's times
where
I could be in my bed for three days straight and cannot get out, cannot move, cannot do anything. And I had to learn to listen to my body because I'm so used to being on the go that I was still working. And I just stopped working because when I started having the headaches, and I want to say this right quick, I started advocating and I started, you know, researching, trying to find out things for myself because, and I tell people, listen to your body. Whenever I got an end, the skin did not show that I had brain mets. And I kept telling them, I said, look, I said, I'm starting to have headaches. I'm feeling dizzy. This is different. You know, and one nurse was like, oh, maybe it's the weather. I told my doctor, I said, no, it's not the weather. And that's one thing about her. This is my third physician. I had to get rid of the other two because we wasn't on the same page. And as a patient,
sometimes you got to do that.
You become an expert of your own body.
You become,
and it's like,
absolutely.
I know my body. I know the changes. You know, we have to be a team at this. So this physician that I have now, you know, she's very good at force, like, listening and being a team. But anyway, the bone scan didn't show that I had brain mets. So I told her, I said, you know what, for peace of mind, let's go ahead and do an MRI anyway. Sure enough, when we did the MRI, it did show that it was brain tumors. And she was like, Keila, I'm so happy that you told me to do that test because no telling when we would have found out because of the mets that I have in my skull. It kind of hid that where it was able, you was able to see it.
Okay. Well, Nani, hang tight. I want to thank you for sharing that awesome story. We're going to continue to talk to you in a minute, but hang tight. I'm going to keep you on. But I want to bring in Deltra. Deltra, are you there? Deltra, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm
here. Hey, all right, Deltra. I have Nani on, too. She just gave her awesome, awesome testimony of story of how
listening.
She was diagnosed.
Thank you,
Nani. With metastatic breast cancer. So, Deltra, first of all, tell everyone how did we connect and how did you get diagnosed with MBC and so forth?
I think if I remember correctly, we connected through the Breast Cancer Baddies group.
Yes, we did.
For the Breast of Us, yeah.
Yes,
for the Breast of Us.
Website and resource.
Yes.
For those that are going through or, you know, surviving with breast cancer, for the Breast of Us has some wonderful information resources for you to go to. So, yes, we met on that website, and
Go ahead.
Yes, we met on that website, and I'm actually, well, call myself a newbie to the whole cancer world. I was just diagnosed, what do they call it, de novo, so right out the gate with metastatic breast cancer in this past August 2019. So in the summer, in July, I noticed a lump in my left breast. I noticed it myself. People always ask me if I found it myself. Yes, I did, because I'm 33 years old, so I'm too young for mammograms, and I don't have any family history, so they were not on my radar for, you know, a few more years. But I felt the lump, wasn't very alarmed, surprisingly, because I'm one of those people who's like constantly like, let me go get this checked out, let me, you know, one of those kind of people. But I wasn't too alarmed. I went ahead and made an appointment though, and went to go and see my doctor, who felt it for me, and then set me up with the ultrasound tech at the end of the week. And I went in there, and I, again, wasn't feeling too nervous until the ultrasound tech started looking, like, concerned, which, of course, freaked me out. And then she went and grabbed the doctor to come and look at the screen and see what she was seeing. And they both looked concerned. And then he just kind of, you know, tried to reassure me and was like, well, you're young, and so it's probably, you know, something benign. So we went from there with me, of course, doing a biopsy. And, of course, then I'm a nervous wreck, but still just kind of feeling like, no, it's probably not going to be anything.
Right.
The odds are probably in my favor. And then just a couple days, 2 to 3 days after my biopsy, the doctor called and was like, unfortunately, you know, the results were not what we hoped for, and it was cancer. And so, of course, I'm feeling very shocked. But then I was just, you know, you get into a mix of extreme anxiety in that waiting period where they're doing all these scans and tests to find out where things are at and what they need to do, and, you know, learning about your specific cancer. And so while that was going on, I just kind of, you know, swung between nervous wreck and really hopeful and learning all I can and getting basically into, like, fight mode, like so many people do, because, they're, you know, everybody knows somebody who's had breast cancer you know, quote unquote, beat it. And so there's always someone who can link you up with somebody who can encourage you. And so that's what I was dealing with. And yeah, just get into fight mode. And then just a few weeks after my initial diagnosis with breast cancer, I found out that it had spread to my liver. When they did a, like, you know, the whole workup, everything scan, and I had been having some bone and like achy bone and back pain, so I was really concerned about that. But my bone was all clear. But then they just saw this one little spot in my liver, and the doctor was just like, it's the liver. Everyone has some stuff in their liver, you know, like, don't freak out about it. So I kind of didn't freak out about it. The biopsy I freaked out about, because that was horrifying, but the liver biopsy. But, yeah, I wasn't too freaked out about it. And then I went in to get the results and see my doctor, and I just wasn't feeling very concerned. It was positive that she was going to tell me, you know, it was nothing. And was just kind of, it went into her office not in a really fearful headspace, and just was really kind of knocked off my feet when she said, you know,
those results aren't what we were expecting, and your, you know, the liver spot was, you know, came back as showing as breast cancer, and so that, you know, bumped you into stage four. And so, of course, my mind's, like, going, I don't even know what happened. It was, like, an out-of-body experience from there.
Right.
The rest of that day, I don't remember, like, leaving her office. I don't remember getting out and going to my local actual cancer center, because I was, like, set up for immediately after there to go meet with my, like, actual oncologist that I'd be working with. And, like, anything that anyone said to me that day, the oncologist said or whatever, was just kind of a blur.
Yeah, because it's like whenever all you
hear is, yeah,
all you hear is those words with cancer. Because I can remember the day that I got the news of my diagnosis, and all I heard was you have breast cancer. And as she was, the nurse was proceeding to ask me questions, I could not remember anything that she said or questions that she asked. I was just trying. All I heard was, you have breast cancer. So I understand completely how you feel, when, especially when hearing the news that you have this disease. But I can only imagine just listening to the both of you, Nani and Deltra. First and foremost, let me just say that you two are some amazing, amazing and strong women. And for you to be striving and surviving with this beast of a disease, I have such admiration and respect for the both of you, because you two are not letting this, you're not letting this bring you down. And I and this right here, just watching you on social media, you're letting others know that have been diagnosed with this disease that it's not a death sentence. You can continue to live your life and be happy and just thrive and survive the way that you two are doing. So I commend both of you for what you are doing, and, again, coming on the show and sharing your stories, because somebody needs to hear this. And especially for those that don't know what metastatic breast cancer is and how it affects not only your body physically but mentally. Because that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother issue too. The anxiety, the fear that you feel when not knowing where else in your body that it spread it to. So I want to you two ladies about your treatment. What does your treatment consist of? So Nani, I'm gonna go back to you. Nani, what does your now that we know that your cancer has now to your brain, like what's your treatment going to be now, and what is it going to be now that is in a new part of your body?
As of right now, I'm on chemo. I'm doing a chemo call. So, and it's once every 4 weeks. To where before I started, I had to go every week for 3 weeks. So, but this one, because it's so intense, it's once every 4 weeks, and people actually, she wasn't going to really try this at first, but when she talked to me about it, she said, you know, usually this is given to women, or, you know, men in their stage two, and they call it the red devil. And she was like, you know, at that stage, you know, it's kind of rough. But, you know, I've already been through other treatment that was really, really rough. So I was like, you know, hey, if you think it's worth trying, let's go ahead and try it. So when we, like I said, now we're doing that every 4 weeks. And then I'll go back to repeat my scans 2 weeks to see how, because I have not had any type of shrinkage at all since I have been diagnosed now for 2 years. So when we did the recent scan, believe it or not, I had some shrinkage in the brain tumors. And when I tell you, I was so excited, because
that is
for me,
awesome.
That was my second treatment. And for me to have shrinkage like that, I was like, okay. Now, it wasn't nowhere else, but I take that. I was like, I'm taking it. So we're going to do two more treatments. I actually get my second treatment tomorrow, and then we'll do another scan to kind of see how it's doing for my brain and the rest of my body. So that's kind of where I'm at now as far as having the treatment. I'm trying to – they had me on steroids because the headache and the dizziness was, like, really bad. And the steroids didn't really quite help all that much. Actually, I think it was making it a little bit worse for me. So they kind of – she took me off the steroids and going to try another type of steroids to kind of see if that would help as well, because that's one of the things that I had to kind of, like, try to control myself as far as anxiety, because it's almost like it's a fear of the unknown. So when you have these things that's happening in your body and you don't know what's going on, it's like, okay, you don't know what to expect. So it kind of sends you, it kind of freaks you out a little bit. And what I tell people, because they always ask me, like, how are you able to do this? How are you able to fight through the pain? How are you able to get up every morning and continue on with life?
Right.
And like I tell them, I had to completely change my lifestyle. You know, everybody can agree with, you know, and have the same God, whatever. I had to have a relationship with God. I had to have faith. I had to pray.
Yeah.
There was no way I could continue living life the way I was, because I would get up every morning and I would cry because I didn't know if that was my last day or not. And when you're surrounded by people and you see that they're dying every day, you know, and that's why a lot of folks don't like to talk about stage four. And you have to talk about it, because if you don't talk about it, you don't know. I still have people asking me, what is MBC? I had a lady tell me, I was told that black women couldn't get breast cancer because, and I believed it. She was like, I believed it because I didn't never see it on TV. I never seen magazines. And that was one of the strong reasons why I started advocating, why I started speaking, because it's like, honey, whoever told you that, or that was a lie. Yes, we can. I'm living proof. But like you said, it's not a death sentence. You know, you have to really find what works for you. And for me,
absolutely,
having a relationship with God and prayer, that is what helped me get back, because I have a will to will. I have a family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still young. There are things I want to do. And I know, you know, it's not even about me anymore, because I used to ask myself, why did this happen to me? Why me? This is not even what's happening. It's only one of my family. I'm still young. What in the world? So, and I had to look at it. It's not even about me anymore. I'm just thankful that, you know, it wasn't my sister. It wasn't my brother.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't anybody close to me. And if I have to be the one, you know, to be active and show people what it's like and how you can still live life and, you know, still love and do what you got to do, then that's just what it is. But I'm going to fight this thing and do what I got to do, because, like I said, I have a will to live.
Absolutely. And you said something that really hit home as you were sharing your treatment. You talked about the lady that said that she didn't know that black women could get breast cancer. This is why we do what we are doing, because that is a myth if I have ever heard one. And that is the reason, the very reason why women of color get diagnosed or die from this disease at a 40% higher rate than white women, because they don't have the knowledge of breast cancer, let alone metastatic breast cancer. And when they do get diagnosed, or when they do go to the doctor and they get diagnosed, they're getting diagnosed at the later stages where there won't be any options for treatment. So being an advocate, like you said, not only being an advocate for others to get the information out there, but it is very, very important to become an advocate for yourself, because you're the one that knows your body better than anybody else. So thank you for that. Thank you for telling us about your treatment. Deltra, let's get with you. What is your what's your treatment plan? And now that you are now that you have MBC, what does your treatment plan consist of?
My treatment plan is actually IV chemo
And it's kind of my, you know, I'll say only option really, because of the type of cancer I have, triple negative. So that usually responds best to IV chemo, you know, so I don't have, I don't get to take a oral one and I can do a home or anything. So every week I am in the infusion chair 2 to 4 hours getting my treatment. And the treatment I'm getting right now is a chemo called Abraxane. And that's combined with an immunotherapy called Tecentriq. And so far, it's very tolerable. I mean, of course, they give you like a long, scary list of side effects, and everyone's body is different and, you know, responds differently. I just feel really fortunate that the main response I've had is just like some fatigue, but I always joke that it's hard to tell if it's from the treatment or from the fact that I have 5 children, so I've felt fatigued for a long time.
And you know what? And that was going to be my next question to you, because you have small children. So how do you manage that and being a mom of young children?
Yeah.
Because I know that
definitely
in itself can be a lot.
It is. It takes, you really have to have a village. Like, a village feels like a requirement. I really, if you don't have one and you're going through something like this, you have to build one. Like, it's so important. Like, I need a village. They need a village. We, you know, all need support. And so it's just been surrounding ourselves with support. I'm really lucky. I live close to family. So they're all there and super supportive. And then we have lots of friends. And we have all these homeschools, so we have a large community around us of homeschoolers, and they have just swooped in and helped so much with things like meals and classes and getting kids to where they need to go. So that's made a huge difference.
And Nani, I know that you
have all had to go with the flow.
Absolutely. And Nani, I know that you have a son, if I'm not mistaken. You have children.
Yeah,
you have children.
My oldest son, he's 21.
Okay.
My oldest son is 21. I have a 20-year-old that's in college, and then I have he just turned 10 here on Thanksgiving Day. And like she said, you know, you have to have a village, because it is really, my kids, they handle it different. Like my oldest son, you know, he was upset because, you know, being a man, it's like, okay, my mom is sick, there's nothing I can do for her. And then my middle child, he was more of, you know, making sure that I was okay. When is your appointment? What did the doctor say? What did you do next? He was kind of like more scared and he didn't know what was going to happen. And then my youngest one, which is 10, you know, he was more like, he's more like my caregiver. Mom, you need anything? And he's like my big support. Oh, Mom, don't worry, we got this. And the string is today. He's just so positive about it. And he understands a lot. And I be honest with my children, because for one, I want them to understand. I want them to know. I want them, you know, down the line, you know, if I'm not here, I want them to be able to share, you know, when they have kids and they teach their daughter, you know, how to protect themselves and the signs to look for. So I be open and honest with them to let them know everything, you know, that pretty much goes on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, and absolutely. Having that village, you have to. And just like Delta said, if you don't have that support system, you need to build that support system.
Yeah.
Because you can't do it. You cannot do it by yourself. And because you need that support to get you through not only each day, but sometimes every hour. Sometimes every second of the day, just to give you that strength that you need just to make it through. So I am so grateful for your villages, because they are just as important in your treatment plan as the medicine itself. And not only that, but Nani, just like you said, just for those that do believe in God or believe in a higher power, having that faith
because I know as an early stage survivor myself, that's what got me through. Was my really kicked in, and I had to have that, like you said, I had to have that conversation with God when I got diagnosed. We had to have a one-on-one. And I'm like, Lord,
yes, ma'am.
The doctor told me
I got cancer,
and I am 36. We got to get rid of this. What are we going to do? And it was just like God gave me that strength, and not only him, but my village, my survivors, my supporters, excuse me, came, and we got through it. So, yes, not only having that support system, if you don't have it, you've got to build it by any means necessary. So, and there are, for those that don't have that support system, there are some wonderful, wonderful organizations, nonprofit organizations out there that you can get in contact with. One being, again, for the rest of us, that will provide wonderful information and resources for you. A lot of online support groups. I know I'm a part of a couple of them. One is called Victoria Fallon, the Breast Cancer Survivor Crusader. Excuse me. So, you know, just going on there. I think Susan G. Coleman has an online support group. And if you ladies know any of them, feel free to throw some out for those that don't have that support system. So, thank you for that. Well, ladies, we are going to end this show on a positive note. We started a brand new year, so happy new year to both of you. And I've been watching you ladies on social media, and especially Delta. You've had an awesome holiday season, Christmas season. Because
I did.
I watched you, and you guys went to New York. And, I mean, it was just wonderful. Nanny, what did you do for the holiday?
Unfortunately, for the holidays, I was sick, and so I didn't do much.
Oh.
Yep, I was you know, just really down and out, because last year for the holidays I was just getting out of the hospital because I had kidney failure, and so I had high hopes, but I didn't let it bother me too much because I was still alive and I was still here. I still got my son over the gift, and I took that, and I was just satisfied with that. And then after, I told them, you know, once we kind of get settled a little bit, we are going to have that Christmas dinner that I didn't get a chance to eat.
Absolutely. You can have that Christmas dinner anytime you want to throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
So. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Like they say, life is a special occasion.
Absolutely. That it is. So do you ladies have anything that you are looking forward to in this new year? We made it into 2020. We start a new decade. Anything that you're looking forward to in this new year?
My New Year's resolution was just to literally make it through this new year. I'm, like, just trying to survive and thrive along the way. Because I'm like, you know, this is my family's new normal. We're still getting used to it. As long as I'm doing well, my first scans that I had last month were awesome. I was responding to treatment really well.
We start a new year off
right. Awesome news. Yeah, that was an awesome start to my new year, to my holidays, because I had to find out my scan results like the day before Christmas Eve. So I was like, oh, Lord. But luckily it was good news. But yeah, this year is going to bring a lot of changes for my family. I'm probably going to be putting my girls into school for the first time in their lives. We've always homeschooled. I love homeschooling, but, you know, just changes and learn to know, you know, what you need to let go of and, you know, different seasons of life. So
I'm a kindergarten teacher, so if you ever have any questions, any concerns, you know how to get in touch with me. I am here to support you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Nani, what are you looking forward to in this new year?
Well, this new year, actually, February the 8th, this past January was me and my husband's 20-year anniversary. So we are renewing our vows.
Thank you.
That is a huge one.
Yes.
I heard about your story about you guys having your vow renewal, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. We're gonna do that on February 8th, and I'm excited about that because you know when we first got married, we didn't have a wedding. We just went to the courthouse, and so I always want to have a wedding. And so when I found out I was sick, I really put that into action. And I'm just looking forward to because like I said, I just came out of work, so I'm just looking forward to doing speaking, advocate, doing things that, just being active with my son and spending more time at the beach if possible and just enjoying life and just living life and just taking it all in and try to make myself a little active and reach out to other females. I know at one point I felt alone, even though you have a lot of support. Sometimes you can feel alone, and I know sometimes people go through that. So I want to reach out a little bit more, and if someone's feeling that way, I'm always here. I'm always available because I love to laugh. I love to have fun. I love to be silly, and I'm just looking forward to great things.
Okay. And before we end this wonderful, wonderful show, any advice that you would give to someone that has been diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer? What's one piece of advice that you would give to that person? Deltra, I'll start with you.
I would just say take a deep breath and hold on tight and just hold on to hope, because I really feel like it's been the hardest thing in my life, but I have to remind myself, but I'm still breathing. I'm still getting through it. Maybe in my head, I know for a lot of people, especially people who either they have a family history, so they worry about it, or they are a survivor and they're worried about recurrence, and to them it could seem the worst possible thing that could happen. And it can definitely feel that way and feel very crushing, but you just have to remind yourself that you can get through, anything that is basically, any weight that is put on your shoulder. You just have to take a deep breath and also feel confident in whatever plan is put in place. It makes a big difference. Like so many people told me when I was in that space, when I was diagnosed and I was in a fog for the first few days or so and just devastated. Mm-hmm. So many people are like, just breathe, practice self-care, cling to, the people around you for support. And also to just know that once you have a plan in place, you'll feel better. And I found it was true for me because that's when I felt like I was, fighting back. Once I had a treatment plan and this is what we're going to do. I feel confident. In the team that I have working with me. So that's the advice I'd give.
Great advice. Nani, what advice would you give?
One of the biggest advice I would give, which is something that I always say, is to please listen to your body. Listen to that inner voice. If you feel that something isn't right, doesn't seem right, even it doesn't hurt, just to check it out, and to always ask questions if you don't know, because of the fact that I really wish that looking at my report, if I understood that report, I could have made better choices, and then I could have had treatment a long time ago, and you just can't assume from what these places tell you, because they're not obligated to tell you. I was told by one of the
radiologist there that, you know, and that's a whole nother issue, but the insurance company is only obligated to tell you certain things. So you just have to listen to your body. You know, even if you if your insurance don't cover it, you know, it is worth to take money instead of buying them a new pair of shoes or get your hair nails to go and get whatever test you, that's possible so that way you can kind of get any type of treatment, you know, much sooner. That would be my biggest advice. And like she said, like that you said, you know, have hope, you know, have faith. And just because it's having stage four, it don't have to be a death sentence. You just have to make the best of life. And when people, you know, they have this thing, oh, I'm going to do a bucket list. I don't call it a bucket list. For me, it's a live, love, life list. Because when you have a will
like
to
that.
Live and you just love life, you want to do things that's living. I don't want to sit and be depressed and, you know, think about, you know, dying. Of course, it happened, but you don't want to put your mindset there. Just enjoy it, enjoy family, enjoy friends, and just enjoy life.
Absolutely, that is some wonderful, wonderful advice from the both of you, Nani and Delta. I want to thank you both for coming on the show today and just sharing your testimony, sharing your lives about living with metastatic breast cancer. Please know that I will always be here for the both of you as a resource, as your supporter, as your friend, as your sister, your survivor sister, because you two are, y'all are just doing it up. And I just want to thank you again for just having the courage to come on and share your story, because someone needed to hear this.
Excuse me. Thank you.
No. So
thank you for your support.
Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
Thank you.
So with that being said, this is your favorite breast cancer survivor, Tisha, host of T and the Big C, signing off. This episode will be posted on my social media pages, so feel free to share and share and share to get the word out. This is a conversation that we will continue to have throughout the year, because not only am I a breast cancer survivor, but I am also a patient advocate. So I am definitely going to be advocating and getting the word out to everyone, especially women of color, about breast cancer and MBC and how we can thrive and survive with. So with that being said, everyone have a great night. And until then, we will talk with you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.